Exodus 12, 1 to 14.
Their old mall. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. You shall keep it until the 14th day of this month. Then the whole assembled congregation of Israel shall slaughter it at twilight. They shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the lamb that same night. They shall eat it roasted over the fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted over the fire with its head, legs, and inner organs. You shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. This is how you shall eat it. Your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it hurriedly. It is the Passover of the Lord. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both human beings and animals. On all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. When I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt.
Our gospel reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 26, verses 17 to 29. It's about the Passover with the disciples. On the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Where do you want us to make the preparations for you to eat the Passover?" He said, "Go into the city to a certain man and say to him, 'The teacher says, my time is near. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.'" So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover meal. When it was evening, he took his place with the 12. And while they were eating, he said, "Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me." And they became greatly distressed and began to say to him, one after another, "Surely not I, Lord." He answered, "The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him. But woe to the one by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that one not to have been born." Judas, who betrayed him, said, "Surely not I, Rabbi." He replied, "You have said so." While they were eating, Jesus took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it, gave it to the disciples, and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will never again drink of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom."
So what I'm going to talk about this morning is God's rescuing love. The Exodus passage, and if we could have it on the screen please, that we looked at first, was in the lectionary. That means it's given in the Church of England as the reading for the day. And it's about Moses and the people of Israel. And I was actually delighted to see this passage as a passage I was to preach, if you like, in the first day of my ministry. And likewise, I chose the next passage, the Matthew passage, because it links me as beautifully from Exodus to Jesus to the communion table. And the passages, they say why I'm here at St. Mark's on this day, on this date. Why you are here. It tells us why we've got a cross on the wall. And the passages tell us why we have this table positioned at the front of the church. And it's all about God's rescuing love. So the passage is going to show us what that rescuing love looks like, how it acts, and how we're to meet with it today, meet with God today. So let's think about the Exodus passage, God's rescuing love remembered in Israel. Let's go back 3,500 years. So this is a long history to what we're about to do. And Israel were God's chosen people. And he'd made promises to their fathers and their forefathers. He'd promised Abraham that the people of Israel would be God's great nation. He promised to Isaac that they would have a land. He promised to Jacob that they would go into Egypt and come out again. But instead, 3,500 years ago, the people, instead of prospering, were persecuted. They were slaves in Egypt, cruelly treated with relentless, life-taking labor. They were at the lowest they'd ever been, spiritually unimpressive, politically and physically oppressed. They couldn't do anything for themselves. All they did, metaphorically and literally, was make bricks. And they needed rescue. And into that darkness came God's rescuing love. He loved them so much, he didn't forget his promises. And he raised up a leader called Moses, and he devised a rescue plan. And we've got it here. Let's go to verse 3. Tell the whole congregation, tell all of Israel, they are to take a lamb for each family, a lamb for each household. And then jumping down to verse 6. You shall slaughter the lamb at twilight and take some of the blood and daub it on the doorposts and the lintel of the house. Now all this talk of blood and death of the firstborns of Egyptians, it's awful to our ears. If we haven't read it and felt queasy, we've probably not read it well enough. It's hard to read, it's hard to take in. If you let it settle in you, it's anger-inducing. And it was always hard. And it should never be taken lightly. And the blood and the death show the depths of the problem, the depths of the fallenness, the depths of the desperation. Now, Samantha and I, in May, we're heading off to the battlefields of northern France and Belgium. My great-great, I think he's my great-great, Uncle Will, he died on the Somme, my grandmother's uncle. And that was 110 years ago. And his blood was shed. And it's awful. And if you go to those grave places, they're terrible places. But we go because their blood was necessary. For whatever reason, it was necessary. And that was part of God's rescuing plan. But how was it to happen? In verse 13, the blood's going to be a sign to you, Israel, a sign for you on your houses where you live. And when I see the blood, that's the destroyer's angel, I will pass over you, and no plague shall destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. And as the story unfolds, that's exactly what happens. Destruction passes over the land, but the Israelites escape Egypt. And it's an event that shaped Jewish history from that day forward, right until now. And it was a sign of God's loving rescue. So the Jews can look to the past and see that they escaped from Egypt, and God rescued them when they couldn't rescue themselves. They could look to the present and see the Exodus as a sign to themselves that they've been set apart of God's people. And they could look to the future and have a hope in God's eternal plan and as a holy nation. Now, let's move forward 1,500 years. We were 3,500 years ago, now we're 2,000 years ago. And we're in the Matthew passage. God rescued, was fulfilled in Christ. Verse 17. On the first day of unleavened bread, that's a bigger festival, the disciples came to Jesus saying, "Where do you want to make the preparations to eat the Passover?" So 1,500 years later, if I got that right, yeah, they're still doing the same meal. Year in, year out, they're still having the same meal. He said, "Go into the city to a certain man and say to him, my time is near. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples." But what we're seeing now, that Jesus is going to give it a deeper meaning, a greater meaning, a shocking meaning. So in verse 10 to 26, there they are having their traditional meal. While they were eating, Jesus took a loaf of bread, and after he blessed it, he broke it, gave it to his disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you." Now, it's impossible to imagine the astonishment of the disciples at what Jesus is saying. They would have been horrified, as we're horrified and would be horrified at the very notion of saying, "Eat my flesh and drink my blood." And if we're not horrified, we've got too used to it. It would be an abomination to us, and it would be an abomination to them, because not only is it gross, it would also make them ritually unclean. It's not what a Jewish person would do. But here again, it's God's rescuing love breaking in an astonishing, shocking way. But what was he talking about? Well, he tells us in verse 28. He says, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." This covenant, this promise, is a new relationship, a permanent relationship, uninhibited. And he's saying that when he knows that in 18 hours, day and a half, he's going to be on that cross. He's going to be on that cross. And his blood poured out for the forgiveness of sins. And so the cross becomes a new exodus, a new escape for all people, a new liberation. And a new people are being formed through Jesus the Messiah. Okay, so we did 3,000 years ago. We did 3,500 years ago. We did 2,000 years ago. I want you to take you now to 1967. Now, I think this is the year. In 1967, a bunch of people, and I've seen the photographs, who were dressed in kind of, the men were kind of dressed in tweedy suits with those very heavy black glasses that were worn in the 60s. And the women were all in those two-piece things with kind of, everyone had hats on with flowers stuck on them and pointy glasses, you know, at the edges, sort of Dame Edna Everage-esque. And they gathered. And what they did is they gathered to celebrate the building of this table. The church had been in the church hall at the back in a multi-purpose building. And the people decided it was time to build a proper church, as it were, and they built this table. They couldn't have made it more solid if they'd tried. Have you seen it? It is a lump. There's a sort of stone, a tiled plinth, bricks, poured concrete, solid bit of wood. This thing's not going anywhere. And it's right there at the front of the church so that we can't miss it. Okay? It's the focal point of this building in all its 1960s mid-century glory. Why did they do it? Well, as God's Passover showed rescuing love, and the cross showed rescuing love, the table is rescuing love for us. Now, exactly what happened on the cross and what happens when we come to communions, theologians could talk about that all day long and have plenty of disagreements. But there's so much that is so obviously clear to all of us. That when we come, as we're going to do shortly, and kneel or stand around these tables, and I serve communion to you, what we're doing is being marked, like the posts were marked, like Jesus was marked. We're being marked. It's a mark, communion, of God's love for us and his claim on us. And he's protecting us. And this sacrament is a gift to us. When we come, as we will do shortly, we're not watching a spectacle, we're taking part. We're not simply remembering the cross, we're entering into it. In this mysterious way, we're joining in with the feast of Christ's body. And the feast that Christ alone, his victory will be there for us once and for all. And when we come, we're coming to be rescued. I don't know about you, but I'm not good enough. I don't get it right. Every day, I mess it up. We don't meet God's perfect standards. I can't come, you can't come here because of any achievement you made. We come acknowledging our wrongs and our failures and our half-heartedness. And we come because Christ did what we could never do. His mercy is wider than our sin. His love is stronger than our weakness. So let's come. Let's come to give thanks for our life with Christ anew. Now, a theme that's developing in my mind for this church, and I'll keep talking about it, is that I want us to practice even more what I know you can do, which is experiencing the presence of God. So we come to experience his presence, and we look forward to the eternal life that he has for us, to the new heaven and the new earth. So come and receive God's rescuing love afresh.